Begin my talk this morning by reading one of the vows of Amida Buddha or Dhammakara Bodhisattva. This expresses the Buddha's hope to create a world of enlightenment and what that world will be like. So I invite you to join me in Gassho. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not all be of the same appearance and should be either beautiful or ugly, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. Hozo Bosatsu, Amida Nyōrai no 第4巻いただきます。私が仏になるとき、私の国はの天人や人々の姿形が、まちまちで美しいもの、醜いものがあるようなら、私は決して悟りを開きませんと。ナマンダ、ツナマンダ、ツナマンダ。Morning, everyone. I'm delighted this morning to be joined by some old friends of ours from Oxnard are here, the Fuji family, Dr. Brian and Nancy Fuji and their sons. Over here, we've got Brandon and Adam. Brandon's going to be, he's a junior now, so he's starting to think about college applications. So he's up here visiting colleges up here in the Bay Area, so we may steal more Southern California talent up here to the Bay Area, but it's wonderful to have them up here. And I'm thinking a little bit about my own time starting off in college many years ago. One of the first classes I had when I started college was a Chinese class. I wanted to learn Chinese as a college student, and so I signed up for Chinese class, even though it met every morning, Monday through Friday at 8:30 a.m. I thought, if you're going to learn Chinese, you got to study hard. So I started going to Chinese class, and I remember the first day of class, I was sitting down, and there were, you know, most of the students at the college I went to were from the Midwest. And so they sat down and kind of typical Midwestern crowd, I have to admit, a lot of blonde hair and blue eyes. And then one of my new classmates came in and sat down next to me. This was still the summer, so it was nice and warm. He had on a shiny, shiny purple shirt. Very shiny, like metallic kind of fabric. Buttoned down to about the middle of his chest. Lots of chest hair coming out, and a nice silver chain around his neck. Definitely a very distinctive style. And one of my other classmates, in sort of true Minnesota polite fashion, said, "Oh, well, that's an interesting shirt. What's it made of?" He said, "This is called lamé." Lamé. Oh, okay. Oh, where'd you get something like that? He said, "At my favorite store on Capitol Hill in Seattle, where I buy almost all of my clothes." So then we realized, okay, this guy is not from around here. He's, you know, an out-of-town student. So this class, as I mentioned, started first thing in the morning, and as the year went on, you know, second, third week, one day we hear him kind of coming down the hall singing, "You got a real type of thing going down, getting down. There's a whole lot of rhythm going round." And it's sort of echoing down the hall. And then he bursts open the door and sits down with a big grin on his face. And this is like 8:30 in the morning. Everybody's kind of groggy. And he's just, you know, lit up with excitement from his, you know, morning, you know, musical, probably listening, you know, with the music cranked up in his dorm room. And we sat down and the Chinese professor said, "You know, we're going to learn a very important phrase today. We're going to learn how to say, how do you say? Zemashuo, how do you say? So let's all practice." You know, we all went back and forth, repeating after him, learning how to say, "Zemashuo, how do you say? How do you say something?" So, you know, he said, "So for example, you know, ask me anything. Ask me anything that you want to know." One of the students said, "Zemashuo, dog." And he said, "Go." That's how you say dog in Chinese. And then this other classmate with the purple shirt, shot his hand up, and he said, Demeshwa, intergalactic jamatory mothership. And the professor sort of stunned silence, and then he proceeded to kind of think about how you would write that, how you would say that in Chinese. And so this guy was not like a typical guy. And, you know, to be quite honest, I grew up in a fairly small town in the Midwest where it's not really cool or it's kind of frowned upon to wear flashy clothing, to kind of stick out and to sort of, you know, draw attention to yourself. You know, we're very kind of modest, humble people. And so I thought, you know, I don't know about this guy. I'm not sure if this is going to be my, you know, like my best friend. And so just sort of went through the first semester. Second semester came around. I went to Chinese class first thing in the morning, Monday morning. Of course, he's there. Then I went to my second period class, which was a kind of religion and literature class. Lo and behold, he's in that class. So then Tuesday rolls around. First thing in the morning, of course, Chinese class. Of course, he's there. And then I go to my second period class on Tuesday. Lo and behold, intro to Asian studies for Asian studies majors. He's in that class too. So I have three classes of my four classes. I'm with him Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 2 hours a day. Tuesday, Thursday, almost 3 hours a day. I'm in class. This is a small school, small classes. So we get to know each other. We get to know each other. I get to, at some point, wind up in a group project with him. I go to his dorm room, and I see that not only does he have one purple lame shirt, but he has a whole spectrum of the color scheme ordered from orange to red to purple to blue, sort of across his closet. He's got a spectrum of these clothing, and I get to know him. You know, years go on. We wind up going to China together, studying abroad in Shanghai. We room together. On one particularly cold evening when our heater's not working, he makes a puddle of lighter fluid on the floor, and it's a concrete floor, and then he lights a match to it, and he's warming himself by this fire in the middle of the floor. So he's kind of an interesting guy, let's say. He's also one of my very best friends in the world to this day. This guy is one of the people who I've come to realize I can count on thick and thin. He's one of those rare friends. I'll give you an example. When my wife, who's not a U.S. citizen, we were moving to this country. I wasn't working at the time. I was living in Japan. I was a student. And so I couldn't prove that I had the income to sponsor her. And when I just sort of mentioned this to him in conversation, without me saying a beat, he said, I'll sponsor her. So he stepped up. It turned out that he couldn't actually do that because he works for Customs and Immigration Enforcement. So it would have been seen as a conflict of interest. But, you know, this person who, when I first met, I was a little bit put off by, it turns out, has become one of my best friends. And I see him every time I go up to Seattle. It helps that he works at the airport. I see him whenever I'm in Seattle. We get together. We're very close. And I think about the people when I first started college. There were certain people who I looked at the way they dressed, listened to the kind of music they were listening to in their dorm room, and I thought, oh, these are my kind of people. I'm going to be friends with these people. And I think about it now, I can't even remember most of their names, those people. And so, you know, the people who we really connect with oftentimes in life aren't the people who our first impression is, oh, this person's cool, this person is a person I'm going to be friends with. And oftentimes we judge people looking at them, thinking that we may have something in common, but find out that, you know, it's just something that goes skin deep. This friend now, as I mentioned, he works at the Customs and Border Protection in Seattle. And from time to time, he works on the line when people are coming through with their passports. And at one point, one of my friends, who was a minister, Reverend Kakihara, some of you may know, is a minister at the temple in Tacoma. So he was coming through the line, and my friend looked at his passport, and he saw that in his forms, he had written that he was a Buddhist minister. And my friend looked up to me and says, Jodo Shinshu? And then, I mean, this is, he is, you know, he's a white guy, a little taller than me, cue ball, shaved head, and a big stocky guy, total poker face. And so this minister's like, oh, Jodo Shinshu. He's like, yeah. My friend said, who's Henry Adams? And then he said, oh, what is, and then my friend just walked away without saying anything. He just walked off. And so he thought, I'm sure that Kakihara-sensei was thinking, oh my gosh, what's Henry into? You know, what has he done? And then my friend sort of came back and explained that he had to sort of recuse himself because of this personal connection. But, you know, so he goes through life doing this to people. You know, people look at him, they meet him for the first time, he makes a strong impression one way or the other. But then you get to know him, and he's a person of tremendous depth, kindness, and generosity. And we have people around us in our lives all the time who are like this, who we may see them, we may make some impression, some judgment, some prejudice based on their appearance, what they look like, their perceived ethnicity. Sometimes this happens to us, sometimes we do this to others. And the Buddha describes a perfect world. What is a perfect world like? It's a world where we're free from these eyes of judging beautiful and ugly. I like this person. I don't care for this person based on the way they look, the way they dress. So when the Buddha says that my world is a world of enlightenment, a world in which everyone is of the same appearance, none are beautiful nor ugly, it's not saying everyone should look exactly the same, not saying everyone should dress exactly the same, but rather saying that no matter how a person appears, that we're able to see them with the eyes of equality, to recognize that just as you are, beautiful and perfect, that's the way, the Buddha's way of seeing the world. And that's the vision that we receive in the Nembutsu, the light of Amida Buddha shining into our hearts and minds, showing us the true way to live with wisdom and compassion. And that's the Buddha's wish for us, to realize birth in that world, to realize those eyes of seeing with perfect equality.
この世界を見ると美しいものと見にくいものというのは一切ないということですね。まあ私たちが初めて人に会う時には、この人の服装とか、人種とか、話し方によって、じゃあ気が合うでしょうとか、気が合わないでしょうと、すぐに変換が入って、すぐにこういう差別的な考え方が出てしまうというのは私ですね。 で、私大学の時に、一人の最初に見た時は、あまり気が合わないだろうと思ってた人が、時間が経つと、知り合ってくると、本当に、親しい、本当に信頼のできる友達であること、気づいたら、前は間違ったな、これが正しい考え方。 または最初に見た人で、この人は気が合うだろうと思ってたら、 親しんでみると、あまり気が合わない実は、表面的になんかあるだろうと思ってたら、中身はない。というのは、私たちがこの表面として、ものとか人を見たら、よく間違うことがある。仏様の見方というのは、表面はみんなそのままで美しいというのが、中身の美しさが見えてくる。 こういう見方は、阿弥陀如来のお浄土に往生する菩薩の見方ですね。仏様が私たちがそういうふうな考え方、そういうふうな見方をすることを望んで、願って私たちをお念仏を与えていただくことができました。ですから、このお念仏の生き方は、その心の中に、何でも誰でも美しくでも、 見にくくでも、そうでもなくて、平等に見える目をいただくものですね。その目をいただくのは仏様が私たちを願っているお念仏の願いでございます。南無阿弥陀仏の念仏をいただくときは、そういう心、そういう見方を心の底にいただくことがあります。So
I'll conclude. I'd like to once again read these words of the Buddha and his aspiration that we should all realize these eyes that can see with perfect equality. I invite you to join me in Gassho. Gassho. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not all be of the same appearance and should be either beautiful or ugly, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Namo Amida Butsu. 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 Namo Amida Butsu.